So, I liked the headlines about the coronation. Well, one headline about the coronation.
Go on.
It was in Private Eye, and it's all it is the words "man in hat sits on chair."
That is succinct.
I think it does the job, really, doesn't it? Really.
It does. If only we could be that brief.
To be fair, it was quite an impressive hat and quite an impressive chair, but fundamentally correct.
It was.
Welcome to episode 240. Now it's been corrected now, because it was 239 just now.
Honestly. So picky.
Episode 240 of the Midfaith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page. There is Joe Davis.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So here we are again.
Long time no see.
It's too long. Oh, have you recovered?
I was reading about how alcohol is dehydrates you. Apparently, for every 200 mL of alcohol you put in your body, 350 mL of the other stuff comes out. Basically,
okay.
Yeah, for reasons I don't understand, chemical reasons I don't understand, your body produces more water. It thinks it's being dehydrated.
Okay.
And so all of that is a way of saying that I'm still quite dehydrated from the weekend. I think.
You listen. Listeners, this is what you might not realise about Nick Page. One, he is very proficient at making cocktails now, if I do say so myself. Thank you. But also, he's a feeder. You did not stop giving us food from the moment we arrived to the moment we left. I mean, I genuinely need a 3-month diet to recover from that one weekend.
Okay, well, a few points on that. One, you had made it clear in last week's podcast that you were coming to examine the contents of the fridge, so...
I loved the contents of the fridge, don't get me wrong.
So that needed doing straight away. Secondly, I don't know if I'm so much a feeder these days as an unwrapper, because I don't think I cooked much. I just unwrapped whatever...
No, you did cook.
You know, Waitrose gave us. Well, they didn't give it to us.
You made us a delicious paella with your fair hand.
I did do that, yeah, I did do that. And some very chewy beef.
Yes, well... Wasn't that chewy?
Well,
you were very worried about that. It was lovely. That's what I want to say. It was lovely.
I don't know. It was the one thing that stopped you talking. I mean, to be honest, you went all contemplative at that beef because it was taking so long to eat this stuff.
It was a mindful moment. But listen, thank you. It was so lovely to see you and so incredible to see your new home. I mean, it is just amazing.
That's one word for it.
No, but it's so you, isn't it? It's quirky and strange and has the odd leakage. I mean,
it's you all over. Yeah. Old and leaking. Yeah, that's pretty much. It's pretty much my biography. Well, it was lovely seeing you, and it was very, you know, it was a lovely weekend, wasn't it? We're going to reflect, I think, on the events of the weekend. We ought to, I suppose, to set that up because, for some of our listeners, and we are a global brand now, obviously.
You mean we've got a listener abroad?
I mean, as the stats have shown, we are huge in I think it was Norway or somewhere, wasn't it? It was a pretty sort of notable weekend for the UK, you know, the coronation and everything. Yeah. So we're gonna reflect a bit on that, and some of that, if you are in one of those places that for insane reasons chose republicanism over our bountiful rule, I don't know, maybe all this will confuse you, but I think we'll try, and we thought it was worth sort of reflecting on that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lovely weekend, wasn't it? It was very full of stuff.
It was full of stuff. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later. What else has been going on? How are you?
Yeah, not great. Struggling a bit with all kinds of stuff going on, as you know. I woke up in time for this podcast, so that's good. That was a bonus.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. But apart from that, it's been quite quiet, really. I haven't really been doing much. I'm trying now to sort of take it a little bit easier. I think I might have burned myself out a bit, really.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah, trying to row back a bit now.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you weren't quite yourself when I saw you and you were trying to do simultaneously about 9,000 jobs on the house. And I was like, is this good for you? I can't.
Anyway, yes. So, other than that, I'm hanging on in there basically, and your good self.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, and trying to, you know, just pace yourself and do all those things. Went to see Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So, listen, you know, I'm not as enthusiastic about Marvel films as you are, clearly, and I frankly got a little bit bored with them all. But I did very much enjoy that movie.
It was fun.
It was funny. It was moving. It makes you laugh and cry, basically. So there you go. Yeah. Highly recommend it.
I hope the cinema's ready for me. I'm going on Friday to see it.
Yeah, and I've got some... a couple of times a year, I try to go away and just take a break and book myself a room somewhere near a bird reserve. I'm going to Rye.
Oh, lovely.
For a quiet little time. So this weekend. So that's really nice. So, all is well, I think.
Well, one of the things that I've realised is that I haven't booked any retreat time for a long time. I haven't been on a retreat. So I'm going, hopefully going next week for just a quiet day. Yeah.
Well, we will reflect on these experiences next week. That's great.
Yeah, and look, we will.
Of course, there's a very big event coming up on Saturday for a lot of people. Not that I'm going to be able to watch it, but on Saturday it's Eurovision. Of course.
It is, yes. Always a big event in our house. My wife is a big fan.
Okay. Are you?
I enjoy the acts. I sort of tune out on the voting, really, because it then descends into a sort of mixture of tedium and geopolitics. And, you know, and all those people who suddenly find themselves delivering the votes from some country and realise that they're in front of billions of people and want to make the most of their moment.
Yeah.
So they never just give you the votes. They always sort of show off their linguistic skills or try and make a joke. And it's...
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it'd be quite moving, though, this year. Quite powerful, because obviously it's in Liverpool rather than Kiev, or Ukraine or wherever it was going to be. So
yeah.
Well, anyway, talking of nul point, and feedback from far-flung places. What have we got?
I think we're just going to do this one bit of feedback this week. But people who are on our Facebook page will be familiar with this a little bit already. But friends, this bit of feedback that came in from James, I'm just going to say, is one of my favourites ever. And he said this. He said, "Hi, Joe. It's interesting you were talking about AI on the last podcast, as coincidentally I have to confess that in a moment of weakness in church recently, I asked..." It's already funny, isn't it? "I asked ChatGPT to write a worship song in the style of Hillsong, but to add a little bit more MFC interest with reference to the song of the Chiff Chaff. Says, I've included the results below. I found it quite plausible all in all and hope it brings you some joy. Best wishes, James." So I'm going to read this out to you.
Mm-hmm.
But before I do, I'm going to say this isn't a gag or a joke. He just fed in the information. And this is the beautiful song. This is the beautiful lyrics that came out. So here we go. So verse one. "Lord, your creation sings from the mountains to the sea, a symphony of praise to the one who reigns supreme." Chorus. And we hear the song of the Chiff Chaff, a melody of hope and grace. "You are faithful, you are true, we worship you, we worship you." Verse 2. "In the midst of every storm, in the calm and in the roar, your love surrounds us all, in your arms we're never alone." And the join the song of the Chiff Chaff, a melody of hope and grace. "You are faithful, you are true, we worship you, we worship you." And then it's got the bridge. "With lifted hands and open hearts, we worship you, our God of stars. You're the one who holds it all, you're the one who hears our call." And we join the song of the Chiff Chaff, a melody of hope and grace. "You are faithful, you are true, we worship you, we worship you." And then the outro is, "We worship you, we worship you. In the song of the Chiff Chaff, we find you. We worship you, we worship you. Forever and always, we will praise your name."
So this explains how they've been writing them all these years, doesn't it, really?
Well, I would say that is a particularly good one. in Venice. Yeah. I mean, I want to say that is slightly better than many I've heard.
I mean, I love the song of the Chiff Chaff. I'm not sure it's a melody of hope and grace.
No,
though.
I don't know that it is. It's two tone, isn't it?
Yes, it's more like a doorbell, really. you know, it's more like a melody of somebody at the door. But you know,
but that's extraordinary. My gob is still smacked.
Well, it is. So this is, for those who don't know, you know, this is computer generated, isn't it? AI
yes.
has written it.
Yes. So,
and what they, how it works is they basically scrape or copy or compile from a vast sort of corpus of writing.
I mean, it wrote that song in a split second. I mean, faster than Ed Sheeran writes his songs even. I mean, it's as fast as your computer is, basically, for that yes. to come out once you type in the criteria.
What it says to me is basically, I don't think it's doing anything in a way that, frankly, if I'm honest, an awful lot of other worship songwriters and hymn writers do. In other words, they just scrape and copy from other bits.
Yes.
They just sort of write down the stuff that they've heard before and whatever sounds good.
Yeah.
At least it's got the Chiff Chaff in there, so, you know.
Exactly, which is what makes it better.
Yeah, indeed.
But I did think that was quite amazing. I mean, that bit about with lifted hands and open hearts, we worship you, our God of stars. I like that. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I know. Well, I can see you singing this. I can see you down at the beach, Chiff Chaffing about. You could replace the chorus with the song of the seagull and put your mask on.
Yeah,
and you'd
exactly.
be there, wouldn't you?
I would be there. Complete. In fact, I'd ask ChatGPT to write me another one about seagulls, I think.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, James, for that. That's very funny and thought provoking. Yeah, very good.
It is. It's quite extraordinary. So thank you so much for that, James. It's just brilliant. And you know, I've already been having fun writing poems about you. But we'll leave that for later.
See, the thing is, Joe, if I write a poem about you, I don't need AI to do it.
No, I know you don't. And you couldn't read it out on this program.
No, that's the other thing about it. It wouldn't be publishable. Get me banned on every social media platform.
Yes. Shall we move on?
Let's just move on. Shall we talk about, therefore, what happened at the weekend?
Yes.
When the man in the hat sat on the chair.
Yes, let's do that.
And you and I were together for it, watching it. It was very, very thought-provoking, I thought, as an event.
Yes.
Both sort of good and bad, really. So, again, for those of you who weren't there was a big coronation service. I mean, what really struck me about it was it's genuinely a church service.
Yes, it is. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
They have the Eucharist. It is thoroughly a church, an ancient church service. And in the midst of the church service, a bloke on a chair gets given a big hat with lots of jewels on.
Yeah.
And invested with lots of strange stuff, really. I ought to read out, actually, my brother showed me a piece from The Times. I think Caitlin Moran wrote it.
Mm.
And she was sort of reflecting on the service. And she said this, she said, maybe you have to leave all analysis and knowingness at the door itself dating back to before William the Conqueror. And this is so frequently weird, the service is so frequently weird, that 21st century brains struggle to believe it's real. The investiture requires a series of symbolic items to be offered to Charles before his donning of them. Vested in the Colobium Sidonis, Super Tunica and Girdle, brackets, the Colobium Sidonis represents simplicity, Hugh Edwards intones incongruously, as what appears to be a solid gold dress is put on the king. Charles then has to take on board the spurs, representing knighthood and bravery, the bracelets of sincerity and wisdom, the sovereign's orb, the ring of kingly dignity, and the rod of equity and mercy. By the time what appears to be the oven glove of God turns up, the whole thing appears to have turned into a game of royal buckaroo or double or drop on crackerjack, where kids had to hold an increased load of prizes and cabbages until their arms gave way and they dropped the lot. And it was it was all these items coming, wasn't there?
They were incredible.
He had one glove on. I thought it was a Michael Jackson tribute act at one point.
No.
And as for the rod of equity and mercy, I mean, you know, that was
that was
impressive, wasn't it? Both you and I loved that.
There were a few people walking around with snooker cues, I did notice, in the background as well. As for Super Tunica, I mean, all I could think of is the lights are going to find you, shining like the sun.
Indeed. It didn't really sort of speak massively of simplicity, that bit. But, it was a weird thing. I'm part of the interest was just seeing something you're not, well, you might see another one, but you're not going to see many of them in your lifetime, and even then it might not be the same thing. But all these symbols, so what really stayed with you out of the event?
Several things. One, I mean, I did genuinely really appreciate the Christian content of it. I think, you know, I liked that there was this vow of coming to serve, not to be served. I liked that. I liked the whole humility of, you know, stripping down to your shirt to be anointed with oil, you know, and not having had all those royal vestiges to have them taken off.
Yeah, now we should explain that bit, shouldn't we? Yeah. For people who didn't see it. So there's one, I thought this was a profoundly moving bit, actually. Yeah. There's one bit where the king, who comes in all his fine robes and dead animals or whatever they are, probably not dead animals given Charles, but anyway.
It was a bit Cruella de Vil at times.
A little bit. He comes in all this stuff. And at one point they put up this sort of like sort of screen.
Magician's screen, I think you described it as to me.
Yeah. It's sort of four panels they put up. And they take him into this middle bit. And the Archbishop of Canterbury, they basically take off his clothing until he's just wearing essentially shirt and, I don't know, breeches of some kind. And then he is anointed with oil on the forehead and on the hand and on the breast, on the heart.
Yeah.
But it was quite moving to see all this stuff come off him. And the idea being
to be fair. I mean, just
well, you,
just
you
to be
saw
clear.
Most of the stuff being taken off, didn't you? We didn't see the anointing. You don't see the anointing. But but the idea is that unless you get the inner man holy, unless the inner man, the man himself or the woman themselves, I suppose, is sanctified, is humbled, then they cannot properly rule anybody or anything. And I thought that was actually very, very profound, very powerful. I did wish, though, that at the end of it, as I said that to you at the time, I did wish at the end of it, though, that the four panels just suddenly fell apart to reveal that he disappeared.
With a puff of smoke, yeah.
Yeah. And the Archbishop's there sort of waving his hands around like David Copperfield, you know, and Prince Charles appears, King Charles appears from a totally different part of the Abbey. You know, that would have been great. That would have been impressive.
Yes. I mean, it was good. I did think it was too long. I don't like long church services. I think that's an open secret. I don't. You know, I worked hard at enjoying the ritual and the symbolism as much as you. And some of it was really powerful and really good. No getting away from it and moving. But other bits do just make me roll my eyes, really. You know, this is one of the biggest events on TV, you know, there's ever been. And there's just lots of men in dresses and snooker cues and lots of gold ornaments everywhere. Mm. And, you know, that royal gold hand grenade being handed around.
The holy hand grenade of Antioch.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose I just find that a little bit... You just feel like... Okay, this ceremony is nice, and I appreciate all the nods to tradition and ritual and symbolism and meaning and everything, but essentially it feels anachronistic. It feels like it belongs to another age. You know, this doesn't feel like a 2023 event. Actually, the way Eurovision probably does, if I may compare the two for a moment, it feels like something that did rightly belong around the time of William the Conqueror. And now here we are, still doing it with all the same ceremony and people dressed in the same clothes. And I suppose I think, and that's how people feel about the church a little bit. Like it was might have been great in 1066 or whenever the first one was. But I worry that they just see that it's just like, well, that belongs in the medieval period when people felt differently about the world and the monarch and everything and religion. And so what place religion today? Well, we wheel it out for these kind of ceremonies that remind us of the past, but it doesn't have much relevance today because gold trinkets and men in dresses carrying snooker cues and all the rest of it doesn't doesn't actually mean that much to most people. And I, again, it makes me, I suppose, feel, I'm sorry, because you're going to come back at me. I feel it coming. But, you know, I suppose I feel like when Jesus said, I will build my church, that isn't what he meant. That's just my views on that bit, really.
No, I think in many respects I agree with you. I think it what it does is it magnifies both the power and the problems of religious ritual, a particularly historic religious ritual. So what we saw then is in essence no different to what you get. For example, the other week I went to a very high Anglican service, an Anglo-Catholic service, lots of incense and lots of bells and all that kind of stuff, just down in a local church. Exactly the same kind of tensions in a way, because people doing stuff that have been done for hundreds, if not thousands of years, except that obviously with the coronation, you've got it, the volume turned up to 11 on it, as it were. Mm. You know, it is so much bigger, so much blingier. So much more ornate and more symbolic, and the symbolism just comes at you, you know, endlessly, as we said. So I think my reflection on it, I felt quite conflicted in a way. I wouldn't like it to cease in a sense that if you have a tradition that has been continued, you know, I think that there's something about doing the same thing, doing those words that have been said, even though they might not be the same for you as they were, you know, for our predecessors. There's something about that. And there's something powerful about the symbolism. And I said to you at the time, I think I would rather at least have lip service paid to things like humility and justice and equity and mercy and all the things that a king is supposed to have.
Okay, right.
Than them not do it at all. Let's be honest. King Charles is probably morally, ethically and behaviour-wise going to be far better king than most of the people who sat in that chair before him, partly because he's got no real power to go and kill anybody or anything like that. You know, if I was to compare him with William the Conqueror, I think I'd know who I'd prefer to sort of hang out with. So, you know, For centuries, kings, queens, whatever monarchs have sat and done that service and in complete hypocrisy, with no intention of living out the words they were speaking. Whereas I do think there was something more real for him.
Yes, I think there is
more potent. So, but isn't that the same as we always have? All of us have in church services. We take part in church services. We sing worship songs, proclaiming we're going to do things that actually, the minute we get out of church, we don't do.
Yeah, we did stop praising him with every breath we have, didn't we? The minute the song was over.
That minute that Chiff Chaff stopped singing, I was not hopeful or graceful at all. You know, so I think it has all the tensions of any traditional church, or any church service, frankly. It's just it's magnified hugely because of the way it's expressed, really.
Yes, I think you're right. I tell you, there was one other image that I found sort of striking, and that was Harry sat a few rows back, you know, not really sort of, it was almost as if he wasn't acknowledged as the king's son. I found, and you know, I'm sure people would say, well, that's his own fault. He perhaps didn't want that. You know, I don't know the wrongs and rights of it. I mean, the image comes to me, I suppose, you know, here is Charles the Great Defender of the Faith as well, because that's one of his titles, isn't it? I suppose I think, well, if I had a figurehead who was to really represent the Christian faith, they'd be like the dad in The Prodigal Son, you know, sort of doing everything to restore that relationship and to... you know, so yeah, I think Charles is a great man. I really do. And I'm certainly not going to judge him or knock him or anything. You know, what a job he has to do. I wouldn't want to do it. And, you know, under the spotlight. And I think he genuinely does have a heart for service, just as his mother did, actually. And I know they live in palaces. And I know they get taxpayers' money. I know that even with all of that, I think it's a rotten job, to be honest. Yeah. And I think it's admirable how they've gone about it, really. But it comes at such a high cost, doesn't it? such a high cost. And, you know, certainly no other royal family than this one has been under the intense media scrutiny, because there wasn't media scrutiny, I suppose, for many years. But now there is. And my golly, it's invasive. I mean, didn't the Mirror Group issue an apology today for phone hacking and Harry and all that sort of thing? I mean, I mean, that's just what goes on.
So I think there's that other aspect in which we've turned the royal family into a soap opera, and we judge everything on a totally different set of criteria. We don't really know what goes on in that thing at all. We don't really know what approaches he's made, or what the conversations have been between them, if there have been conversations. We don't know. We're hearing it third hand, you know. I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because the whole thing is, in a sense, about appearances. The whole thing is about appearances trying to reflect some inner reality. So it's about symbols showing some inner reality. And yet all the time we are suckered in on appearance. I mean, I found it interesting, like one of the most striking characters there was Penny Mordaunt with the sword.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that woman has a core of steel, I tell you what. So this was, it was very funny, actually. It was there's an MP called Penny Mordaunt, just to explain to people, who was given a kind of honorary job by the Prime Minister before the current one, basically to try and keep her out of the public eye. That was the idea.
She's given this job as
chair of the Privy Council, I think, or something like that. Just keep her quiet, give her an honorary job, and just keep her happy. What's happened is, she's actually been stood right bang at the front of the coronation.
She stole the show.
Holding a sword, stealing the show.
Impressively. For a couple of hours,
But what I then heard was that basically her odds, Penny Mordaunt's odds of becoming the next Prime Minister, have suddenly shot up.
That's amazing.
She's now 13-2 on. Or not Prime Minister, next leader of the Conservative Party. You know, and you think, why? Because she held a sword.
It's not that we're fickle people, is it?
So we're still going in on these ancient appearances of strength and, you know, symbolism and all this kind of stuff. So I do think the whole thing is tremendously conflicted. And in essence, it has all the same problems that we have with any sort of state religion, or indeed most church services, frankly, between what is professed and what is symbolised and what is real. And I don't think we can obviously sort of make that judgment in terms of how King Charles thought about it, or Queen Camilla, or anybody else there. But you know, I suppose the best thing is for all of us, when we're engaged with anything with these kinds of symbols, this kind of language, is firstly to sort of try as best we can to reimagine the symbols for ourselves, to really grasp their power. And secondly, you know, don't sing or say anything that maybe you're not at least going to try and do. I don't know.
What, you mean integrity or something stupid like that?
Yeah, that kind of stuff, really. Yeah. And that is difficult, isn't it? Because when you sing stuff, you do sing stuff that you have no intention of doing. Yeah, you know, exactly. I'm not going to give up all my riches for God, you know. There's no way. You can't have all my silver and gold, actually, because apart from anything else, I've got holes in the roof I need to fix.
I didn't notice any silver and gold, I must admit, and I had a good look round your house.
Yeah, you did. Well, I kept it out of the fridge. That's how I avoided you finding it.
Right. Harsh but true.
Yeah, so I think it was fascinating, and I think there's still a lot to think about with it, and you know, it has all the inherent contradictions and difficulties of state religion. You know, it's a good thing in many ways that people praying and people you know, worshipping is seen visibly, but on the other hand, state power, was this, as you said, was this what Jesus started? So for me, that's it, really. I mean, in my closing comments, that's it. It's both wonderful and worrying, and powerful and perplexing at the same time.
I think that's really well put. That, you know, the pageantry is spectacular and impressive, and you know, the sheer stage with which it is set is mind-blowing. It's really impressive, but the questions as regards church and how it's portrayed and how it is, actually, I think will always probably disturb us a bit. But in terms of our beloved listeners and you and me, I mean, didn't someone cleverer than what I am say we are a royal priesthood anyway. So, you know, let's get anointing.
Well, indeed. you know, again, I think the symbolism is powerful, really. So find your symbols, I suppose, I would say to people.
Yeah.
You know, find the symbols that actually mean something to you. And go, I think that I would take that away. I think I think so many sections of the church ignore the physical. They forget about the symbol of the chiff-chaff.
Yes, indeed.
Or the oven glove of God. But yeah. I think it's really important for us to find those symbols and to invest them with meaning and to use them. I think they can really add to your encounters with the divine, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's good. Well, here we are. What would be appropriate new rituals for the church could be an interesting line of inquiry. Send yours to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. We'd love to hear what modern rituals and metaphors would kind of work for you in terms of statesmanship and services you'd like to be a part of. Yeah.
Yeah, and let us know your reflections as well. I don't think about the monarchy as such, because I think we all have different views on that.
Sure,
and that's not what this podcast is particularly about.
No.
And but, you know, if anything you saw moved you or angered you or whatever, do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. So how would people get in touch, Joe?
And like I just said, joe@midfaithcrisis.org.
Did you just say that?
Yeah, you faded out. It's okay. It's like you don't listen to me sometimes. But it did mean that we got to repeat it.
It's like I don't listen to you sometimes. Oh, look, you're giving me symbolic gestures.
I'm giving you a ritualistic gesture.
That's lovely. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. And thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. And we will return next week with our rods of equity and mercy and our oven gloves of power and our sacred orbs of utter drivel.
Looking forward to it already.
So yes, bless you, our subjects, and we'll see you next week.
See you then.